just to change things up a bit, I do want to acknowledge both of the important scholars who have spoken before me. I'm clearly just here to be the eye candy. Actually, the only person who finds that joke funny is my wife. And I also want to note the importance of strong institutions. We had agreed each to speak no more than 10 minutes, which proves that it's very dangerous to get between Phil Magnus and a microphone. Let me say that some of the institutions that we depend on provide us with two things without which we cannot do. One of those is curation, and the other is verification. So if you remember nothing else about what I say today, remember that from institutions we need curation and verification. Or, what is important and what is true? What is important and what is true? Now, I'm Catholic, and I look to the church for some of both of those things. But in the last 20 years or so, we've had some difficulties with the scandals with priests and with the current pope's attitude towards many things that involve markets. And nonetheless, in spite of that, we still depend on institutions. So one of the things that characterizes conservatives is the recognition that institutions, even if they are imperfect, are the things on which we must build. Now, those of you who are old enough to remember would be able to think with me back to Walter Cronkite and CBS News. So every evening, one of our great national institutions, Walter Cronkite, would tell us what was important and what was true. Now, whether he was actually right about those two things was not so important. Usually, the other networks, if you flip channels, they would all be covering the same stories in the same order. So there was some agreement. Now, if you compare what the networks are on, often when I'm at the gym pretending to ride an exercise bicycle, you know, we'll have Fox, CNN, MSNBC, and they're all talking about completely different things. And they tend to be having someone just expressing opinions. So what is important and what is true is something that we've lost touch with. Now, I think I can say a little bit about how that happened. 10 years ago, I published an article on a concept I called truthiness. And to be fair, it was actually something that Stephen Colbert came up with. And you have to give Colbert some credit. In the mid-2000s, at least, he actually played it more or less straight. And this was on his segment called The Word. And what he meant by truthiness was the quality of stating concepts or facts one wishes or believes to be true rather than concepts or facts known to be true. Now, what I claimed was that truthiness trumps truth, which is the intuition based on feelings or values are more important than reasons, debate, or evidence. I wish I had not been so right. In 2007, you could see the glimpses of that, but I want to tell a little story about the origins of truthiness and the end of the ancien regime of the major mass media. In some ways, and you may remember this, on September 4th, 2004, 60 Minutes had broken a story, and Dan Rather had supported it, had broken a story that George Bush had failed to report for a physical while supposedly on active duty in Alabama. And the most important document was a direct written order that was issued by Lieutenant Colonel Jerry Killian. Now, some people examined that letter and saw that it was in a proportional font and that the unit numbers, 43rd and 51st, both had superscripts that were not just proportional but were raised exactly the right amount. That was actually almost impossible to do with the manual typewriters that were available. So as a result, people were asking questions about this document because this was the core of CBS's case against President Bush. So a person some of you may know, Stephen Hayes, was debating, I guess you would say, with Jonathan Klein, the head of CBS News, and Klein said an amazingly smug thing, and this is the end of news being able to curate and check on facts. He said, you couldn't have a starker contrast between the multiple layers of checks and balances at 60 Minutes and a guy sitting in his living room in his pajamas writing. Now, that was the origin of pajama TV. That was the origin of pajama media, because there's an interesting question about whether we can discover truth with many, many people each trying to check on facts compared to trusting authority. Now, I think we lost sight of something, though. We can detect falsehood, but we can't find truth. And that was the point of my article. By throwing out the institutions that curate and check on facts, we're actually getting rid of our ability to decide what's important. We may be able to say something about what is true, but we have trouble determining what is important. So why had CBS gone ahead? The answer is they had believed their narrative more than they believed in the need for evidence. They were approaching the story like a legal advocate rather than a news organization. And in fact, Dan Rather, in several interviews, actually said an amazing thing. It doesn't matter if the letters are true. I would defend the essential truth of the narrative. Good God. You're entitled to your beliefs, sir. But you occupy a position of authority in one of the institutions that we depend on to curate and legitimate. And that means that you're trying to exploit that authority. With that exploitation, we see the authority itself simply disappear, and we're all the worse for it. So more and more people independently studied the letter. There was no conspiracy. There was no coordination. Many people were just interested in it. Eventually, the source, the so-called source, actually said, no, I didn't get that. I don't know what y'all are talking about. Completely abandoned. The entire story fell apart. Rather issued a tepid apology, and four people, including the producer, Mary Mapes, were fired. So that idea that you can have a story that's essentially accurate and not have to rely on the facts, I think brings us to the problem of essential truth. When we talk about truthiness and the problem of essential truth, when those words were stated in 2004, 50 to 55% of Americans trusted the news media in polls. Now it's 20 to 25%. This is something that they have done to themselves. It's actually probably closer to 16 for some of the news media. That's bad news for civility and for civic discourse. We really can't do without it. So when you look at this, the examples are so legion that I wanted to just highlight two. One is the one that Dr. Magnus has already talked about. My valued colleague, Nancy McLean, in talking about public choice. But November 5th, 2016, just 3 days before the election, the egregious Huffington Post published an article lambasting the website 538 and Nate Silver for pointing out that a number of polls in key states in the Electoral College had polling results that still showed Clinton winning, but they were within the error, the measurement error, which means that if the errors were correlated across states, that is, if the same thing happened in Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Ohio, it was actually possible Trump could win. Now, Silver didn't change the probabilities, but he did say it's actually possible that Trump could win, and he was reporting on objective facts that were coming from the compilation of these polls. The HuffPo went nuts. How dare you say that? Clearly, you're putting your thumb on the scale. You're talking for the other side. If I have my news and you have yours, and both of us rely on truthiness, the essential truth of our beliefs, we actually can't have a conversation because we can't agree on what's important or on what's true. So 12 years ago, when I was writing about truthiness, it was still a pretty new notion, one that seemed kind of funny and whimsical. It's not funny now. Thank you.